Shalom, I'm Rabbi Daniel Goldfarb from the Conservative Yeshiva in Jerusalem, and we're talking about Hanukkah in general and Mao Zedong in particular today. Hanukkah, of course, is not a Torah-ordained holiday, like Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, or the three pilgrimage festivals, Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. It's historically based, commemorating an event that took place where the Jews were in very serious danger, like Purim, and indeed Yom HaSma'ud in our own time. These have been considered of sufficient miraculous character to merit being made holidays with specific rituals celebrated every year. From early on, Hanukkah was viewed with a certain ambivalence, because while the Maccabees achieved a great victory over the Greeks in the early 2nd century BCE, it was short-lived, and indeed their claim to the monarchy and the deeds of their descendants were sullied by serious religious and moral lapses. Hanukkah received a revival, so to speak, in the 20th century. Its proximity to Christmas clearly contributed to the giving presents part of the holiday, and the establishment of the State of Israel and the seemingly miraculous achievements of Tzahal, the Israel Defense Forces, in defending the state, gave the Jewish people once again images of heroism and military prowess, so long absent from Jewish life. The unfortunate part is that for so many, Hanukkah is considered a children's holiday. People get together, exchange presents, light candles, and then head for the food. Some will rush through a verse or two of Mao Zedong, an impatient pause between the oils, those used for the lights on the menorah, and those for cooking the latkes and sufganiyot. Too bad. Mao Zedong is a world unto itself. Perhaps the piyut, that means the liturgical poem, the one most often sung and least understood. In contrast to Adon Olam, which has a fixed text but a variety of tunes, Mao Zedong has basically one standard tune but many deviations in text. We'll consider some of these. A word about the author. Evidently his name was Mordechai, as seen in the acrostic in the first letters of each of the first five verses. Mem, Resh, Dalet, Kaf, Yud. Most scholars place Mordechai in the 13th century in Ashkenaz, that area of eastern France, western Germany, the western part of Germany. These were difficult times for Jews living in this Christian environment with lots of oppression, ups and downs in it, and the impact of the Crusades on their daily lives. I'm amazed at the variety of versions of Mao Zedong which appear in Sidurim. Some have six verses, sometimes just Hebrew, sometimes also English, either some or one. Many, including some Orthodox Sidurim, like the old and still wonderful Hertz Daily Prayer Book, have five. And many have just one verse in Hebrew, the first one, Mao Zedong Yeshuati, often with English translation, usually Rock of Ages, Let Our Song Praise Your Saving Power. From the late 19th century English version by De Sola Poole and Marcus Jastrow. Our Sim Shalom Sidur from 1985 was such a Sidur. It had one verse in Hebrew and English, and the English was Rock of Ages. And I asked myself, what does that first verse in Hebrew, Mao Zedong Yeshuati, have to do with Hanukkah? And what's the English verse, Rock of Ages, have to do with the Hebrew? In fact, I have collected Mao Zedong as it appears in a variety of Sidurim and have found versions with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 verses. The new Sim Shaloms and the Or Hadash, that's the Sim Shalom with the wonderful commentary, of the conservative movement now have 5 verses in Hebrew and 1 verse in English. Good old Rock of Ages. Before we dig into the text, a word about the structure. Mao Zedong contains 5 verses or 6. Scholars differ about the 6th verse, but we'll leave that aside for the moment. Verse 1, the one that everybody sings, if they sing anything, is like an introduction. Verses 2 through 5 constitute a selective summary of Jewish history, citing 4 specific events and ignoring others. The 6th verse is a conclusion of sorts. And since we're speaking English here, a word about translations. There are many, of which the Jastrow de Sola Poole version is perhaps the best known. The translations break into 2 camps. Those loyal to the text, such as the Art Scroll and In a Special Night, for example, and those loyal to the tune, so that the English version may be sung comfortably to the traditional melody. But keep your eyes open. Not only does the English sometimes depart from the literal meaning, some Siddurim have emended the Hebrew text as well. Mao's tour is not meant for kids. Let's get started, and if you have a text of Mao's tour in front of you, that's great. And if also the sheet of biblical verses I prepared, better, but you can do without it as well. Mao's tour, like all good PU team, is only marginally understood if studied on the literal level, the words on the page, even with a good translation. Our friend Mordechai here makes frequent use or reference to biblical verses and stories and to rabbinic sources as well. And he assumed that his readers know these too. Such reading of a piyut turns it from two dimensions into three, adding much depth and richness. Verse 1. If you can, read over the first verse in Hebrew, or a literal translation, and the Rock of Ages verse. Rock of Ages is wonderful, a song of praise and gratitude, sung to a joyful, uplifting tune. Furious they assailed us, but your arm availed us, and your word broke their sword when our own strength failed us. Great, wonderful. God intervened when we were in trouble and defeated the enemy in a way we were unable to do. The bad guys have been vanquished. The tzoras are over. Our troubles behind us. Let's go eat the latkes. But is that what the Hebrew says? Ma'os tzur, a mighty rock. The word tzur, rock, appears frequently in the Bible in relation to God. An image of strength and stability. Like Prudential Insurance uses the Rock of Gibraltar as its logo. The phrase ma'os tzur is a paraphrase of V'hayali letzu'ur ma'oz, be for me a mighty rock, in Psalm 31:3. Ma'oz tzur yeshuati, O mighty rock of salvation, l'cha na'e l'shabeach, it's lovely to praise you. That sounds great. But I have a problem. In fact, two problems. Before I can praise you, you must do two things. One, tikun beit tefilati, re-establish my house of prayer, the fallen temple, so that I may bring offerings, v'sham todah nezabeach, and there offer these sacrifices. And secondly, tikun matbeach, prepare a slaughterhouse for my snarling foes, mitzar hamnabeach. And then, once you've done these two things, rebuild the temple and defeat my enemies, Azegmor Bashir Mizmor Chanukata Mizbeach. Then, and only then, Az, I'll be able to complete the dedication of the altar with song. The author of verse number 1 is hardly the triumphal poet of Rock of Ages. His troubles are not behind him. He is miring in them. This lack of a house for worship, the pressure of the raging foes like snarling dogs, is the reality in which he lives. He offers the Lord a bargain. You save me and rebuild the temple, and I will bring sacrifices and sing your praises. We're not there yet, not by a long shot. The phrase, le'et tachin matbeach, when you prepare the slaughter, is interesting. The author is calling for a slaughterhouse for our foes, recalling the words from the Joseph story in Genesis 40. Joseph, and later the two ministers who angered Pharaoh, Sarha Mashkim, the chief butler, and Sarha Ofim, the chief baker, were put in the custody of a mishmar of Sar HaTabachim. This is not the royal chef or kitchen. Tabach here is not chef, but the executioner, Tevach. Beit Rav Katule, a house of much killing, says Onkelos. The author's reference is not by accident. The Joseph story is fresh in our ears when we sing Ma'oz Tzur. Vayeshev is always the Shabbat before or during Chanukah. We'll see this story again. Rabbi Hertz, chief rabbi of the British Empire in the middle 20th century, clearly had trouble with this phrase. He probably felt it would not go over well at the royal Christmas Chanukah party, so he changed the phrase to Tashbit Matbeach, thou shalt cause slaughter to cease. Who can be against that? But note how he felt either free or necessary compelled to change the Hebrew. I see that the new Masorti Sidur in Israel, the Anit Filati, follows Rabbi Hertz's version. It's ironic that Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, in Germany, in the late 19th century, comments that the reference to Beit Tefilati, Redikun Beit Tefilati, restore my house of prayer, recalls Isaiah 56:7, Ki Beiti Beit Tefilah Yikara Lekol Ha'amim, that my house be called a house of Tefilah for all the peoples, a wonderfully universal vision of the end of days, but hardly Halacha Ruach, the mood of our author Mordechai in verse 1 of Maoz Tzur. One last point. I asked earlier if this verse is connected to Chanukah. It does not recall the events, nor celebrate the victory there or anywhere else. It expresses a pain plea to enable us to be able to do such a celebration after God does what we request Him to do. The last line speaks of Chanukah Tamizbeah, which of course has the word Chanukah, and also recalls Mizmor Shir Chanukah Tabayat LeDavid from Psalm 30, the perek we read each day of Chanukah at Shachrit, and the one immediately preceding Psalm 31, where we saw the source of our opening words, Maoz Tzur, and we'll see Psalm 31 again. So there's a literary allusion at least, and the not-so-subtle plea that just as it happened in the days of the Maccabees, may it happen again in our time. Verse 2. Now we're in business. The history lesson begins with our slavery. This verse is safug, well steeped in biblical references, mostly from the story in Exodus. But it begins with a paraphrase from Psalm 88. Ra'ot sava nafshi, my soul is sated with tzoros, with trouble, which in a word is the dominant mood of Maoz Tzur. Be'yagon kochi kila, grief has consumed my strength. From Psalm 31, like Maoz Tzur, this time verse 8. Chaye mararu bakoshi, our lives were embittered with hardship. That's from Exodus 1:14, the story of the Exodus, of slavery. Many translations include the word Egypt here. For instance, see Rabbi Hertz on page 951, though you won't find Mitzrayim in the Hebrew. Mordechai, the author, wrote only Beshibud Malchut Egla, subjugated in the kingdom of the heifer, and expected his readers to understand the reference to Jeremiah 46:10, Egla Yafefiyah Mitzrayim, Egypt is a beautiful heifer. I suspect that if our congregants saw the words the kingdom of the heifer on the page, they would look askance. God's rescue is described using words and short phrases from the Exodus story from chapters 14, 15, and 19. Notice two things which will be repeated. God's raised us up like an endangered treasure at the same time that he sank Pharaoh, the Kol Zaro, and all his forces into the depths. As in verse 1, where our ability to worship God is dependent on the defeat of our enemies, so here too. They went down as we came up. And note, there's a substance here, water. Verse 3. We're in Babel, following the Babylonia, following the destruction of the first temple in 586 BCE, and the Galut, the forced exile of much of the Jewish population, especially the elite, the leadership to Babylonia. Note, what happened between verses 2 and 3, the Sinai experience, entry into the land of Israel, Kings David and Solomon, for example, is told in a very abbreviated form. Dvir kocho heviani. He brought us to his holy abode, v'gam sham lo shakadati, and there too I had no rest. Wording carefully chosen with biblical references. The word heviani is interesting because it is taken from Shirat Hayam, Exodus 15:17, which was the subject of the previous verse and quoted there. Coincidence? Unlikely. We'll see Mordechai will do this again. The noges, the oppressor, exiled us using Isaiah 14:4's reference to the king of Babylonia, evidently because we worshipped false gods. And our stay in Babylonia was also problematic. There we drank Yayin Ra'al, another liquid note. Yayin Ra'al is actually poison wine, and were almost lost. Kimat She'avarti. To what? The danger in this verse is not physical, an aggressor trying to kill us, but foreign culture idolatry, of which poison wine is a symbol. But Jeremiah's prophecy in 25:12 was fulfilled. After 70 years, Zerubbabel, the Persian, overthrew Babylonia, and we were saved from being lost, from going over the edge. And notice the gematria of Yayin, that's 70. We were saved from being lost to poison wine and all it represents. We'll continue in the next session.